Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger's communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click the Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, and support services. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio. My name is Karen Krecha, and I'm the Executive Director for Autism Empowerment and also your host for today's show. Autism Empowerment is a nonprofit 501c3 charity based out of Vancouver, Washington, and we aim to serve and support individuals of all ages and abilities in the autism and Asperger communities locally, nationally, and worldwide. That also includes families, educators, and other caregiving folks that are related to the autism community. Autism Empowerment Radio is one of the programs and services we provide, and we're looking to spread the word. So if you happen to be on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or Pinterest, we truly appreciate you giving our station a positive plug. If you don't yet subscribe or follow us, you can do so for free at any time by going to blogtalkradio.com/autismempowerment, or you can go to iTunes and then just type Autism Empowerment there into search under the podcast section. We have links also on the autismempowerment.org website, so it's very simple, and we invite you to connect with us after the show. The date this show is being recorded is Friday, January 25th, 2013. This is our 6th radio show of the year and our 46th overall. We're excited to let you know that our show is expanding to include more broadcasts, more special guests, and lots of really great content. We also have a sister radio show, Autism and Scouting Radio, which specializes in show topics that are related to scouting and the spectrum. In a few minutes, I'll be bringing on our special guest today, Toby Birch Rates, who is the Executive Director of the Autism Society of Oregon. She's also the mom to two sons on the autism spectrum and a really great autism advocate. We'll be talking with Toby about the Autism Society and what they're currently working on. If you're interested in talking with us on air with a question or a comment, our call-in number today is 602-753-1530. That number again is 602-753-1530. 753-1530. If you're listening to our show on demand and would like to get in touch with Toby, you can do so at autismsocietyoregon.org, and you can also get in touch with us here at Autism Empowerment at autismempowerment.org. Before I bring Toby on air, I want to give a special shout-out and thanks to my last guests, McNall Mason and her son Max Suarez from Tacoma, Washington. Max is a charming 10-year-old boy on the autism spectrum, and he and his mom now collaborate together to create artwork and kids' books that help spread acceptance and raise money for charity. It's a really cool concept, and if you missed that show or any of our other recent broadcasts, they're always available for free on demand. There's three ways to plug into those. The first is by going to blogtalkradio.com/autismempowerment. The second way, as I mentioned before, is to subscribe via iTunes. And then the third way is to go ahead and find our links at autismempowerment.org. I also wanted to let you know about a few of our upcoming guests. On Wednesday, January 30th at 1 p.m. Pacific, we're bringing on Yvonne Mikolnisak, Executive Director of the Asperger Women's Association, to talk about their organization. And on Saturday, February 2nd, Matt Friedman, the creator and cartoonist of Dude, I'm an Aspie, joins us to talk about autism and Asperger's advocacy through humor and cartooning. On Wednesday, February 6th, we'll be speaking with Jonathan Murphy, an Aspie voiceover artist and actor from the San Francisco Bay Area. And then sometime in February, probably early to middle portion, we'll also be bringing on Courtney Freitag, the editor and founder of Spectrums Magazine, to talk about their debut launch in the Portland metro and southwest Washington area in March of this year. At Autism Empowerment Radio, our goal is to promote acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger communities. We do this by bringing on a wide variety of guests who can educate, inform, motivate, inspire, and help us feel connected in our community. Our guests include individuals on the spectrum, parents, siblings, educators, medical practitioners, authors, parent advocates, entrepreneurs, performing artists, and quite frankly, anyone who's looking to make a positive difference within the autism and Asperger communities and our world as a whole. So we want to take a moment and thank you for your support. It's folks like you that allow Autism Empowerment Radio to be on air, and to get the word out to others. So let's go on and get to the good stuff. Toby Birch Rates will be coming on in just a moment. She's the mother of two children, both of whom are autistic. Her older son has been diagnosed with Asperger syndrome, and her younger son has autism. She understands that autism is a spectrum disorder, observing how her own children have very different support needs and have responded differently to different types of therapy and treatments. Having moved to Oregon 3 years ago, she's had to learn how to navigate the educational, medical, governmental, and community support systems available. Mentoring parents new to the autism diagnosis and or new to Oregon and instilling the ability to self-advocate in her children, as well as supporting self-advocacy for everyone on the autism spectrum, are areas of particular interest. Before becoming executive director of the Autism Society of Oregon, Toby was a volunteer board member for 2 years and most recently vice president of the board of directors. She previously practiced law in the Washington, D.C. metro area and in Boulder, Colorado. She currently volunteers with the Portland Asperger's Network, and is a IEP parent partner volunteer through the Oregon PTI program of the RISE Center. So I'm going to go ahead and bring her on air right now so that we can talk with her. Toby, welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. It's a real delight to have you on air here today. And I was hoping that you might go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and your family and how autism impacts your daily life.
Sure. One thing I did want to mention, I haven't updated my bio to say that the RISE Center is no longer in existence, and their work has been taken over by FACT, Families and Communities Together. So for families who are looking for help with the special ed process, FACT is a wonderful resource. For my family, as you're right, I do have two boys on the autism spectrum. My older son, who is almost 13, is very mildly impacted, and he's a great, creative, quirky individual and very unique. He has his own YouTube channel where he does stop-motion animation films with Playmobil characters, and he loves new subscribers.
Oh, that's great. What's the name of his channel, if we can plug that for him?
Sure, he'd love that. It's called Kanubis Productions. That's Khanubis Productions, or you can look for it under my name, which is Toby Rates, TobiRates.
That's wonderful.
I'm thrilled to get the plug.
Oh, no, that's great. We look forward to checking that out. I have a 13-year-old as well, and I know that he will be a subscriber after the show as well.
Oh, terrific. That's wonderful. Yeah, he has over 200 subscribers. It's amazing to me. Then my younger son, who's 8.5, is much more severely impacted by autism. He is nonverbal, and which means not only does he not speak, but he also understands very little of language. It's only recently that he's actually been able to understand, you know, some basic things like his name, the word stop for danger, and, you know, shoes and socks and sort of basic everyday things, and that helps enormously. But they're both, you know, wonderful kids, very happy. They bring a lot of joy to our lives, both to me and my husband. It's hard for me to say exactly how it impacts our lives daily because this is our lives. You know, we don't really have anything to compare it to. This is who they are. And a lot of times I'll say to people, well, how about if I just tell you what my day is like and you tell me what you find crazy?
No, that's a good way to look at it. You know, in our family, our kids are both on the autism spectrum as well, and we don't know anything different.
Exactly. At this point, I don't know a whole lot about neurotypical child development because it's just not what I see.
Yeah, no. Now, you are the executive director for the Autism Society of Oregon, and I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about that. How long have you held that role, and what does the position entail?
Sure. I came on as executive director in October of 2011, so not quite a year and a half now. And as you mentioned in my bio, I segued in from the board of directors, where I'd been volunteering for 2 years prior to that. Basically, being the executive director means that I am here to implement on a daily basis the vision and overall direction set by the board of directors. And we have 10 or 11 members of the board of directors. I am the only paid employee of the Autism Society of Oregon. We have lots of wonderful volunteers, and they're enormously helpful in actually doing the programs that we do. But I am here to be the gatekeeper. I answer most of the phone calls, all the phone calls that come into the office, update the website, which is an enormous source of information for the community, coordinate the Take a Break program, coordinate all of our volunteers throughout the state. I'm running the walkathon this year, and I help coordinate the workshops program with the committee chair, who's Jonathan Chase, one of our board members. But basically, almost anything that goes on in the Autism Society comes through me some way or another.
Well, it sounds like you have your work cut out for you.
It's busy, but having practiced law, this is just a joy for me to be able to do what I really care about and what is my passion.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. How many members do you actually have there in the Autism Society of Oregon?
Well, we don't actually have members for the Autism Society of Oregon chapter. The people who get a membership go through the National Autism Society. But for us, so we just help anyone who needs it. We do have constituents. We have a mailing list, a contact list of about 5,700 people at this point. And we keep in touch with them through e-newsletters. We do some mailings. And through our website and our Facebook page and all the wonderful social media out there.
Now, you said you have about 5,600, 5,700 newsletter subscribers. How does that compare to the prevalence rate in Oregon? I know that from what I've heard that Oregon has one of the highest prevalence rates in the country.
The most recent data I have is that the prevalence rate in Oregon is 1 in 71 children have an autism either diagnosis or educational identification by age 8, with roughly just under 4 million people in the state of Oregon. We clearly are not reaching 1 in 71 people, but from my understanding, there's about 8,000 people currently with an autism diagnosis or educational identification, and that's increasing at about 600 per year. So of the 8,000 who are currently identified, we reach 5,600, 5,700 of them. So we don't have blanket coverage, but we're getting there.
Would you say that most of the people under that number are 18 and under, or do you have a good number of adults as well that are being reached out to?
Well, I would say that most of the people that we reach are parents or family members of
okay.
children on the autism spectrum. We do have increasing numbers of adults on the autism spectrum who are reaching out to us, which is how we develop our newsletter list, because we always check and make sure people actually want to be on it.
Sure.
But we have, that's an area where we're seeing an increasing number of people contacting us, either looking for a diagnosis because they have questions about whether they may be on the spectrum, or people who do have a diagnosis looking for resources as adults, of which there are very, very few.
That's one of the things here. We're based in Southwest Washington, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the geographic location of Vancouver, and we're finding that that's one of the biggest challenges when people call in looking for resources. It's just difficult to point in a particular direction.
That's, the thing is, it's not as if there's that many resources for children, but there are, educational resources. We're working very hard to increase the availability of medical resources through the Autism Society. But once you reach adulthood, it's like falling off a cliff. What is available to adults in Oregon through the state, there is a settlement of a lawsuit that now provides for brokerages. That if you have an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis particularly one that was made before you turned 22, then you would be entitled through the Department of Human Services, Developmental Disability Services, to have services through a brokerage where you have a personal agent who works with you to develop a plan based on your capabilities and interests for employment and for housing. Obviously, some do better work than others. And then there's the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services, or VOC Rehab, which also works with people on the autism spectrum, as well as it's cross-disability, so it's not simply autism, to help people who can work find appropriate employment. And then
now,
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, federally, if you qualify, if you can't work, you know, there's always applying for Social Security benefits, which are hard to get, and they don't. It provides about, I think it's $675 a month right now, and that's
which isn't
about it.
Going to do too much, unfortunately.
It as someone has said, it's not a work plan.
No,
you know, it's not a career path.
No, definitely not. Now, what would you say are some of the improvements that you've seen in Oregon over the past year? I know that there have been some different advocacy things passed in terms of medical for younger kids. Could you talk to that a little bit?
Well, actually, we're working very hard on getting legislation passed that would open up health insurance coverage for autism therapies in Oregon. Right now, there is arguably a mandate for autism services in Oregon. However, getting that actually enforced is incredibly problematic. Basically, parents have had to go through administrative reviews. We've had one parent that actually won a federal lawsuit against their insurance company. Other parents have gone through the administrative review route, and all the ones that have gone through, I think except one, have been successful. But that's a very long, complicated, difficult route for parents to have to take. And we're talking primarily for services for young children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for the medical route. So, and we've been working very, very hard, and we've had the support of Senator Bates and Senator Haas in the Oregon legislature to try and come to consensus with all the stakeholders involved, the insurance carriers, the educational system, Developmental Disability Service, and the advocacy community, to try and help get the services that are needed to the children and adults who need them without having to go through such a long, convoluted, and difficult process. I mean, quite frankly, most people, parents of young autistic children, do not have the wherewithal to fight their insurance companies to get benefits.
No, just dealing with everyday life takes a lot of time and energy.
And then with children with special needs, all children, raising children is a difficult job. Raising children with special needs does create special challenges.
What is the biggest request that you get when you're manning the phones and people are calling and looking for assistance? What do you tend to hear the most?
Well, we have been tracking this, and the most often the questions asked are, is a parent of someone, you know, between the ages of probably 5 and 18, so education age, asking for resources? Where can they find resources for their child? Where can they find resources for themselves also? Running the gamut from, you know, help with this, navigating the special ed system, finding medical services, support services, activities, that's the main one. We also, probably a close second, is adults looking for resources. People, and then also closely behind are children, parents of children looking to get an autism diagnosis or at least an evaluation, and the same thing for adults. I recently had one mother call in looking to see if she could get an autism evaluation for her 2-month-old child. That's probably the youngest I've heard.
Yeah, that would be pretty young. We haven't heard that young yet.
Yeah. I thought, you know, maybe just enjoy the child for a little while and
yeah.
how the child develops.
You know, in Southwest Washington, a lot of times we have to go into Oregon to get diagnosis. Our children were actually diagnosed in Oregon. And I know that the waiting list can just be tremendously long. Are you finding that to still be the case for people
absolutely.
That are calling in now?
Absolutely. Both at OHSU, at their CDRC center, there's a very long wait list. They do try and get the younger children, I think 5 and under, they do give them priority. And also at Providence, they also have a wait list. I think it's not quite as long as OHSU's. And both of those facilities take the Oregon Health Plan. The ART Center, ARTZ, is another well-regarded facility for evaluation and diagnosis. But I don't believe they take OHP, and it's my understanding that they also have a wait list. So it, and I know at OHSU they have been reworking their system to try and do more of what they call triage, where they see people sooner to really weed out those who really don't need a full evaluation to determine that they probably are not on the autism spectrum, because I forget the exact number, but they have a very large percentage of the children who come through their clinic who do not end up with an autism diagnosis. They may end up with a different diagnosis, but it's really to everyone's benefit to see if they can find those children and move them to where they do belong so that the other children who would benefit from an autism diagnosis can get in.
No, that makes a lot
not
of sense.
Not an easy process.
No.
I don't think that process has been without its bumps. Let me put it that way.
And then for adults as well, I know that that's a big challenge.
Yeah. What I suggest to people, particularly most adults who are inquiring about a way to get an evaluation, oftentimes do not have money to pay a private practitioner. If they do, we have on our website professional resource directory that has about 40 different categories with all sorts of things, including adult services, psychologists, diagnosis. You know, they can certainly look there. For people who do not have the financial wherewithal to pay a private practitioner and don't have insurance coverage, I do suggest that they go to the Office of Vocational Rehabilitative Services, OVRS, for their county, and see if they qualify for their services, because as part of their qualification process, they will do evaluations.
So oh, that's interesting.
Say to them, you know, if you say to them that you think you may have an autism spectrum disorder, they will most likely evaluate you for that also. The problem is you don't have any say-so over who's doing the evaluation, and you don't own the evaluation, so Voc Rehab gets to see all of it. Those are really the only drawbacks that I can think of. But that is, it is a good way to get an evaluation that if you don't have the financial resources to pay for one, and it can, you know, be several hundred dollars. And if Voc Rehab does evaluate you, finds out you're on the autism spectrum, they can use that information for helping you to find appropriate employment. And if the person is not someone who would be appropriate for employment, who can't work due to their disability, then that's helpful information to go to Social Security with.
Okay, that's good information to know. I have a question for you. With the changes that are coming up in the DSM-5, where everything's going to be more under one umbrella, autistic spectrum disorder, we've gotten a lot of questions from parents. Are people going to need to go back and take their children, for example, that have a PDD-NOS diagnosis or an Asperger's diagnosis? Are they going to need them to go get reevaluated or re-diagnosed in order to still continue to receive medical services or school services?
For the school services, what my understanding is that children are reevaluated every 3 years. To see if they continue to qualify for educational services regardless. In Oregon, they don't depend on a medical diagnosis such as you would get under the DSM-5 in order to qualify for educational services. Some school districts do take that into account. Others don't even, you know, whether you've got a medical diagnosis or not, they don't care. They're going to do their own evaluation. And part of, beyond even finding that you have an autism spectrum disorder, they also have to find that due to having an ASD that you are not able to access your education in a way that someone else who would. So they have to find that there's that component also. So I think the schools, it stays the same. You're just going to be doing your three-year evaluation as always. For medical services, I don't really know. I would think it's going to depend on the insurer. There, as I said earlier, there's, you know, particularly for behavioral therapies, there's not a whole lot of people able to access them under the current system right now. There are more people able to access other therapies such as speech, OT, PT, speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. But I would check with your insurer on that. They have changed the criteria, or they will be, when the DSM-5 comes out. For an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis, they've actually sort of cleaned it up and made it easier. Because when my son was diagnosed, it was very confusing. It was a, you know, take two from each of six different categories and you know, quite the cafeteria plan. So I think they've made it easier. My understanding also is that if a child or an adult has an Asperger's diagnosis or a PDD-NOS, which are both sort of on within the autism spectrum disorders umbrella, they probably would not lose it. But also, if they did not qualify anymore under the criteria, most likely there is another category in the DSM-5 that would cover them, such as a social communication disorder.
And as far as services like within the school, a lot of it's going to be based on what their educational need is, and that parents should continue to proactively advocate for whatever those particular needs are, regardless of what a diagnosis might say.
The other thing with the educational services, you can the child can qualify under one of 11 different categories, but it doesn't matter which category they qualify under. It's an individualized education plan. You have to deal with the child, not with the label. So if your qualification had been autism and for some reason it changes to communication disorder, then it's still, you know, it's still the child who needs to be worked with, and it's still the individual child for whom you have to look at their level, present level of functioning and the appropriate goals and the services required to meet those goals.
And we're hoping that the schools are going to go ahead and do that. You know, I think that there's just so much to be determined. And I think that, you know, for the most part, they're going to be working towards what's the benefit of the child. And hopefully the other stuff won't muddle the waters or muddy the waters, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't, you know, particularly in dealing with the people who deal directly with our kids, the teachers in the classrooms, the principals, the pediatricians, the therapists, no one got into those jobs because they want to deny services to our kids.
Right. I hear you.
They find ways to help our kids. I can't.
They do.
I'm quite as rosy about the people who are more removed in more of the administrative positions. But, you know, my strong feeling is that children who are currently receiving services and need those services, they're going to continue to get what services are available. Really the big pity is that more services are not available.
Yeah. No, I hear you there as well. It just seems that there are more and more people that are qualifying, but there's less availability and room to be able to accommodate.
Well, I know in the educational aspect, the special ed services, I've seen a chart where all of the special ed categories except for autism have either remained steady or decreasing. The autism line is going straight up. So there are more and more children receiving an autism identification for special ed services. And yes, less and less money to actually help provide the services that they need.
As far as what organizations like Autism Society do to be able to help parents and individuals on the spectrum outside of what they're getting from their medical services or outside their what they're getting from their school system, what exactly, for our listeners out there who might not be as familiar with the Autism Society, what is the mission of the organization or what are some of the support services and programs that you can offer to people?
Sure. Thanks for asking. The mission of the Autism Society of Oregon is to empower individuals who are on the autism spectrum as well as their families and their caregivers to improve the quality of their lives, and that's through support and information. We provide things like, we don't do direct services. We're not going to provide therapy, but we do help people who are trying to find appropriate therapists for themselves or for their children. We do that through what we call our community intake. We have our website, which has an enormous amount of information on it. That's at autismsocietyoregon.org. Sorry for that. It's autismsocietyoregon.org is our website, which we've revamped over the last year. Has a lot of information and hopefully is easier to navigate. And also through email, through phone contacts, through personal contacts, providing information to people about what resources are out there. We also do a lot of outreach where we'll make presentations to any group, really, across the state that is looking for information about autism. We sponsor support and activity groups. We have about 20 across the state of Oregon, ranging from groups for girls on the spectrum to young adults, to parents, especially sometimes just for mom groups, and there's a group that's starting for just for dads. So we try and hit the full range. We've done sibling workshops of the fact that you have the person on the autism spectrum who is going to need differing support and services throughout their life, and it is a lifelong disability. You also have the impact on the family, from the parents, the siblings, everyone, is a part of the autism spectrum in that way. We have our workshops program where what we've done is we've taken our annual fall conference and decided that we could really reach more people in more locations and on more issues by doing a series of smaller workshops. So, for example, this year we have the Autism Summit coming up in Bend on March 18th, and that's in coordination with Abilitree and CODSN, which are both groups that are local to Central Oregon. And we'll have Barb Avila and Jonathan Chase speaking there. And we're hoping to put on an employment workshop in Portland in April. And then we also have a program coming with Swindells Resource Center in Salem in June, also for transitioning and, young adults. And then last year we had done a gathering of doctors talking about latest research in autism, and we're planning on doing that again in the fall. We have our Take a Break program, which is incredibly popular, where we provide parents of autistic children, and that includes grown children, with the opportunity to go out for the evening, to take a break, to relax and recharge. And right now, unfortunately, we have a very long waiting list for that, but we are doing our best to reach everybody. But just the ability, and you probably know this as the parent of autistic kids yourself, just the ability to go out and have a date night.
Respite is one of the biggest things that we get requests for and help with, just being able to get that break to recharge your batteries.
Yes. I mean, it really helps the whole family. And this is one of my personal views, is that autistic children are just like other children, but more so. Raising children is tough. Raising children on the autism spectrum, requires even more. So all parents need a break. But parents of children on the autism spectrum, they just generally they don't get that break. It's very hard to... my younger son is nonverbal. I can't leave him with the teenage babysitter down the street. He needs specialized care when I go out, and that gets really expensive.
Yeah. And you want to make absolutely sure, if you are getting out, that you're actually being able to go and enjoy that without constantly worrying that, you're going to need to go back because you're not sure if he's in qualified hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't leave them if I didn't think you were in qualified
health. Right.
You just can't. But so what we do provide through the Take a Break program is a gift certificate to a local restaurant of their choice, two movie passes, and up to $48 for respite care.
And, oh, that's neat.
The respite care provider can be anyone over the age of 18 that the parents feel comfortable with. They don't have to be, you know, background checked and a member of a respite care network or anything like that. As long as
the parents can vet them in advance.
Yeah. And, you know, family members are fine, too.
Do you have a respite care network? Do you have a because that's one of those things that we're trying to kind of get started over here is a list of respite care providers for parents to be able to plug into. Do you guys have that on your website at all?
What we have is under our directory, our professional resource directory, we do have listings of respite care providers. And these are people who have contacted us to say they can provide these services. We don't independently vet these people or make sure that they do have the qualifications they say. We have the parents do that. It's not a long list. We haven't been able to set up a full list. We do have several people in the Bend area. Our chapter rep volunteer there, Michelle Harper, has put together a nice list of people. But that's why we do say, unfortunately, we can't, you know, match you with a respite care provider, but we do suggest people contact their child's school, particularly if they're in a self-contained classroom. Those aides know the child and have had a background check through the school, and they're often very willing, you know, particularly if they can get paid, to babysit for an evening.
That's a great idea. A lot of times they're looking for, you know, additional hours too, so.
And that's another thing we've found with our support groups, that particularly to be able to have parents present, you have to provide child care. So we have had in some of our support groups, one in Pendleton, and another one, two actually in Bend and in Redmond, we will provide payment to usually their local educational assistants or people who are qualified to handle autistic children, and they'll watch the kids in the same building, usually with the parents there. So it's, the parents know the kids are just right down the hall, but they're able to actually participate in the support group.
And I hear you. I mean, I find that when you have support groups or different types of things and you are able to provide that respite or able to provide that on site, you're going to have a much larger turnout than otherwise.
I mean, otherwise, and I know because I've been there too, that having to leave my child or find care for him so that I could attend a support group, it was impossible during some points of his life. You know.
Yeah.
And luckily there are online communities. There's two very good ones here in the Portland area. There's one through the Portland Asperger's Network. They have an online chat group. And also the Westside Autism Moms have a chat group through Facebook, and then ASO also has a Facebook page. And I love the online chat groups because I can access them at any time. I don't have to leave my house. I'm a night owl. I can be up at 2 in the morning, you know, in my fuzzy bathrobe and slippers.
No one's going to know.
Yeah, and I don't have to wait for a specific night to have a problem, or have a question I need answered. So I'm a big fan of those.
Absolutely. You know, and I agree with you there. That's one of the reasons that we like the concept of Autism Empowerment Radio, where people can listen to episodes on demand. You don't have to worry about being there live. You know, you can plug into those things. I'm a fan of webinars and that kind of stuff, too. I think online chat support is really great. It's a, you know, it's more and more popular nowadays, and it's great that there's those opportunities as well. If someone wants to go ahead and plug into those resources, they'd be able to find those links at the AutismSocietyOregon.org website as well.
Absolutely. If they look under support, and then we have all the different support and activity groups listed by region.
Okay.
So just find your county and plug into that particular region. For the Portland metro area, it's either Region 6 or Region 8. We go by the ESD regions. which don't make a whole lot of sense to me in some cases, but Region 8 is Washington County, and Region 6 includes both Multnomah and Clackamas counties. But the
Great.
Entire state of Oregon is on there. We list the support groups that ASO sponsors, and then we list everything that we know about in that area. And if people have more to add, you know, please contact us. There's an email link there, or call us. Our phone number is 503-636-1676, or toll-free, it's 1-888-AUTISM and the number 1. And for people for whom that's just annoying, that's 1-888-288-4761. And so contact us and let us know if there's more to list or if something is no longer active so that we can take it off. The last thing I was going to get to that we do is advocacy work. We have been working very, very hard, as I said, with Senator Bates and Senator House and with all the stakeholders to try and get autism health insurance reform in Oregon so that autism therapies are covered under health insurance, both public and private health insurance, without question, without having to go through administrative reviews and lawsuits and so forth,
right.
to get the services that people need to them without having to fight about it. And that's been a huge focus of our efforts over the last few years. And we're very hopeful for this year, but we're still not there yet. We're working on it hard.
Still working, yeah. I hear you. Now, we have just about 3 minutes left. You have done... It goes
Let
by quickly.
Let me tell you about the walk-a-thon then.
That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to give you a chance to go ahead and plug that before we were off air.
Thanks, Karen. The walk-a-thon, April 21st in Southeast Portland at Oaks Park. It's our 11th annual one. It's really more of a family information event and carnival. The walk itself is quite short. It's about a half mile around Oaks Park. But we have community resource tables. We have magicians, face painters, a raffle, Tots obstacle course. We have a gluten-free food sample area. We have a crafts table. We've had the local Star Wars clubs. They come in movie authentic quality costumes.
Awesome!
We also will have the second year running that we will have breakfast and coffee available for purchase, and Par Lumber is donating that. So everything purchased will be donated to ASO. But
if someone wants to get involved with that, where would they go to get information?
It is on our website. It's on
Which
our Facebook
is,
page.
Which is, once again, AutismSocietyOregon.org.
Yes, you got it right. Thank you. And you can always simply Google Autism Society Oregon, or it is AutismSocietyOregon.org.
Wonderful.
And, you know, it's a wonderful event where you have... You know, to meet other people in the community, to see other families, to find out about the resources that are out there. And a lot of people stay and buy ride bracelets, which we sell at a discount, and stay and play on the rides for the afternoon. And, you know, it's so early in the season, it being April 21st, that it's almost entirely autistic families there. So it's a wonderful sense of community and a great way to go out, and the whole family can have a fun day.
That sounds like a lot of fun. What time does it start?
The tables open at 9. The walk itself is at 10:45, but there's lots to do between 9 and 10:45. And then after that, you know, the resource tables stay open. The food and coffee will stay open for as long, I think, till 11:30 or until we run out. And if you go to the website, there's links there to go to the registration site and to set up a fundraising page yourself. It is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and it's how we fund most of our programs, because we are funded solely by private donations.
Well, listeners, we've got less than a minute left. Go ahead and support that. Definitely go ahead and support the Autism Society of Oregon Walkathon. You can get more information on that and anything else that Toby has been talking about at the AutismSocietyOregon.org website. Toby, I want to say thank you so much for taking time from your day to come on air. It's been a delight talking with you and listening about what you and the Autism Society of Oregon does.
Well, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate you having me on. Just want to add one quick thing, that if you're not in the Portland area, there's also a walkathon that will be in Warrenton in Clatsop County, and that's on April 13th, and there's information on that on our website, too.
Sounds good. So people
thanks,
plug
Sarah.
Into that as well. And again, this is great Autism Empowerment Radio, thanking our special guest, Toby Bertraits, for coming on air. Thank you for listening to our show today, and we look forward to having you back in the future. Best wishes.
Oh, thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Goodbye.
Goodbye.